You're listening to Power Producers Shop Talk, where we are refining and redefining the sales game by equipping you with the tools you need to differentiate yourself in the marketplace.
Well, it's like when we audit the mod with Mod Advisor and are able to give them the action items that they're going to use to lower their total cost of risk.
Tactical skills that will help you provide deliverable value to your clients and prospects.
It's going to be a great year in 2022 at Florida Risk Partners now that IPFS is in the game with their total pay strategy. We can write excess and surplus lines and completely remove the agency bill from our agency. People, if you're not using Total Pay by IPFS, you're definitely leaving money on the table.
And action items that you can provide to take your prospects and clients to the next level.
Having partners like Mineral only bolsters the fact that your clients do not care about the insurance. It's all of the value that you're able to add. And with partners like Mineral, who can help with both HR and environmental health and safety, we can't help but win.
This is Power Producers Shop Talk. Production redefined. Are you ready to feel the power?
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Power Producers Shop Talk, where we are refining and redefining the sales game, and I am getting ready to refine and redefine my vacation game, because as soon as we are done recording this, I'm headed off to PAC, man. We gotta go. I hate to do this, but we have to go to the Bahamas for the next week. But before all that boring nonsense happens, I thought we would do something electric, like bring Abby O'Brien back on the podcast to talk risk management and things we're doing here at Florida Risk Partners. And by the way, if you like what you hear here, might want to be on that boot camp we're dropping on the 27th of March, where we are going to show you our tech stack and the workflows surrounding that, presented by Abby with me as an assist. I'm actually going to do an hour on artificial intelligence for the modern producer to kick things off at 9 o'clock. And then Abby and I are going to go live at, I believe, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, whatever time it is. You don't want to miss it. It's going to be good. And it'll actually give you some tangible views of what you hear us describe all the time. So I'm pretty pumped up about that. But anyhow, that being said, Abby has a list of questions. She thought it would be a good idea for her to do like a reverse podcast interview today. So I'm going to turn it over to her. What you got?
All right. Excited to ask you even more questions than I do on a daily basis.
I used to have jet black hair before Abby worked with me. And then all of a sudden, I look like Polly Walnuts if I don't get my hair cut on a regular basis.
All right. So I think that it's pretty easy to be good at maybe one thing or a couple of things. But one thing I've learned working here is that you're pretty good at a lot of different things. But in addition to that, you also like to give away some of your secrets. So where do you think that like original like teaching mindset kind of came from?
Ooh, man, that is good grief. Just coming out throwing haymakers right out of the box. You know, it's kind of interesting. I can tell you that I have teachers in my family. So on my dad's side of the family, all of his siblings are educators in some way, shape, or form, which is wild to me because I never had an interest of being a teacher. I think that so I don't credit it to like it being a family thing or anything like that, even though maybe deep seated it is somehow. But I really think that where it comes from goes back to my days of when I ran grocery stores. Honestly, I found out that if I took the time to teach somebody how to do something right the first time, and I gave them the application as to why I was showing them how to do it that way, that it stuck. And I usually only had to do it one time. So for me to teach somebody something, it's kind of like parenting your kids. One of the concepts that I feel parents need to adopt when they're raising children is you can't just say because I told you so. I mean, that's the standing joke, right? When you're a parent, it's like, don't put your hand on the stove. Why not, mommy? Because I told you so. No, that's great, but I told you so is not going to get your kid through life. You need to give people the reason why. And with your kids, you need to give them the moral reason why so that they can begin to develop a moral compass. And so I feel like in some kind of a weird way, the fact that that's how I integrate with my kids and I teach them, it just kind of spills over into when I teach anybody anything, because I think I'm just been conditioned to give the why behind everything. And so specific to the grocery industry, the reason I liked it is because I could see in real time almost that when I invested in somebody to teach them how to do something the way that I would do it or the way that I had been able to do it successfully in the past, you could almost see it change how they operated immediately. And when you're dealing with department heads and things like that, it's making a financial impact on their own family and how much they earn, because you could take a produce manager that's not hitting their numbers for bonus and show them to get to the gross profit number they need to. And now they get a nice extra $1,000, $2,000 at the end of the month in the form of a bonus. And that's very rewarding for them. And that's honestly how I'm wired. I enjoy watching other people benefit from things. And so I think that's one of the reasons why doing the podcast, going and speaking, having Killing Commercial and all of that stuff, I'm not motivated by money. I mean, I like it. I prefer to have a lot of it. But at the end of the day, my real, and I'm being dead serious when I say this, my real motivation in life is taking something that has helped me, teaching it to somebody else, and know that I made a positive impact on them. If that's all I did and I was a nonprofit, I would be perfectly content with my life that way. The money doesn't matter. Wow, nothing in response to that. I mean,
that was a pretty intense answer. I'm not surprised that you have so much background in teaching. I mean, obviously, as one, I originally reached out to you to become a mentee and then got really lucky that you needed someone to intern over the summer.
I think that we can probably both agree that we both got lucky on that one. So,
oh, absolutely.
I'm also an opportunist, Abby. I'm not going to let a good opportunity pass me by. So, you know, I'm a big believer in you hire before you need people, and especially in this industry with as bad as things are. And while I didn't necessarily have the vision for what you're ultimately doing, which I don't know that either one of us have the vision for what you're ultimately doing, but in the role that you're in and integrating the technology and all of those things, that was something that honestly had been on my radar, and it would have, you know, it was something I was going to be doing down the road, but the reality was you presented yourself much earlier, and I'm not going to be somebody who waits until I'm ready. If I feel the right person's there, that's why Kyle's in the agency. I wasn't ready to hire a producer, certainly not my first producer, when Kyle and I had that conversation. But I also knew that Kyle was going to get gobbled up by somebody else selling something. So I stretched and made it happen, because that was ultimately what was going to be best for the company moving forward.
So I kind of have two questions to follow up with that. One of the things that stuck with me early on in our communications was that you said that insurance is full of a lot of C students, a lot of average people. And I think that the longer I'm in the industry, the different people kind of present themselves in a different way. But where do you think that your drive to become more than average came from or came in? And then how in your daily, what you're looking for, how do you see the difference?
I think that there is a marked difference between people who grew up playing organized sports and were on teams and people who didn't. And that's not a knock against anybody who didn't grow up in that environment. Maybe you were musically inclined and you were in band and you had to be part of a group there. Certainly it's not athletics, but it's equally as competitive if you've ever been in band. Most people don't know this about me, but I was in band from the time I could hold an instrument all the way through almost all of high school until I moved to West Virginia, I can play three different brass instruments that nobody probably ever even knew. I took piano lessons for 15 or 16 years. That's why there's a piano in the back of the office. When my grandmother passed away, that was willed to me, and I don't have room for it at the house. So hopefully one day when I actually have a little bit of extra time, if I want to relieve stress, I can go back, tickle the ivories for a little bit or whatever. So I understand that aspect of it too. And I mean, even when you're in band, if you want to be first chair, you have to challenge everybody that's ahead of you and beat them in a challenge to move up in the ranks. So, you know, I'm naturally an extremely competitive person. It does not matter what it is. I promise you, I will find a way to compete in literally any aspect of life. And I think a good bit of that does come genetically, because my dad is an extremely competitive person as well. And that probably does come from him. But I feel like having that in your DNA and then putting you into the organized format of being in sports programs with teams where you're required to perform at a certain level, or you're going to get hammered by your teammates. They're going to beat you down and then pick you back up again. But, you know, I like to win, man. I don't think people, you know, Jason Cass asks on his podcast all the time, do you love to win or hate to lose? I don't think anybody really likes losing, but you can find some solace in losing if there's a lesson in there. The reality is I just like to win. I don't want to lose. I want to win every single time, no matter what it is that I'm doing. And I don't want to say that I'm like completely consumed by it, but I can tell you right now, if my 10-year-old little girl is going to come in the paint in the driveway, nothing's free in the paint. I'm going to throw her a shot just like I would anybody. I'm kidding. I would never do that to Caroline. I just wanted to see her reaction. But no, I mean, I just think I'm an ultra competitive person by nature. And when you put me in an environment where my own work product and effort is immediately translated into numbers or dollars that I can see, that's what motivates me. Even when, you know, you go back to the grocery time that I was in the industry, it was all numbers. And you might have 300 people on a report. My goal was to be top on that report, period. I wanted the best numbers, because anything else just wasn't a victory to me. So, you know, I can't really explain it. I think it's just kind of who you are, but it only gets more compounded if you're in situations where you do compete. And I grew up playing sports. Like, to me, operating in a team environment is normal. I would not be a good golfer for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is my horrible swing. But I wouldn't want to be in an individual. I would argue that I don't want to be in an individual sport. I want to be competitive in a team environment, which is what we have. And I think that that's one of the things that gives me help too, because when you grow up in that kind of an environment, you're never going to be the best at everything. And not every day is going to be a good day. There's going to be a time where you miss the ground ball or the line drive, or you miss the free throw at the end of the game, or you drop a pass or whatever, but you live to play another day and you get picked up and you can go out, course correct, and get better. You know, when you're in a team environment, other people can help you and pick you up, and you're surrounded by people who are better at certain things. It's no different in the business world. You said I'm pretty good at a lot of things. I feel like I'm really good at one or two. Being pretty good at a lot of things is like being a C student at a lot of things, in my opinion. So I have to hire people who are better than me in those things to make the team itself stronger. And I think that's a huge thing that a lot of people aren't humble enough to admit or think through, but I have no problem doing it, because if my ultimate goal is to win, I'm willing to step aside and let somebody else have the limelight, somebody else take the credit and be the best at what they're at, if it means the victory for the team.
I understand more and more about you the more questions that I ask, because I feel like we're very like-minded, and the growing up with sports,
and brothers.
I, when it comes to competition, let's just say I'm not allowed to play certain games in my family anymore because I'm too competitive.
Yeah, well,
I just also really like to win.
I'm not going to help you with that problem, Abby. I'm only going to make it worse.
I was going to ask if there was any change that you noticed for yourself. Are you the same level of competitive that you always have been? Does it kind of like vary, kind of sway?
I, I would tell you that I am probably every bit, if not more competitive, the older I get. I just think it manifests itself differently. I'm not like, I was so nasty when I played baseball that I would point it. If I struck you out, I would point at you. I would tell you, don't get in the box and waste my time again. I would do what, like, I would do whatever I needed to do to get in somebody's head. And what I would say is, I am calmly intense these days. I don't think the intensity of the competitiveness has waned any. I just think how it manifests itself in my ability to control my knee-jerk reaction has changed a lot as I've gotten older.
That's pretty fair. I can definitely say that for me, it's probably more controlled now. I mean, I still, there's work that can be done, but I definitely can control a little bit more now than I used to when I was younger.
I had no problem throwing sweet chin music at somebody when I played baseball. If that's what needed to happen, it was gonna happen. So, I play to win, period.
It's
Now
all
I want to
about.
be very, very clear though, because I think this is an important distinction, especially in the insurance industry. I play to win with the right moral and ethical compass. I don't play to win at all costs. And I think that there are a lot of people who, when you say you're competitive or you like to win, that you're willing to do whatever it takes. I'm willing to do whatever it takes within the framework of the rules. I'm not going to go break a bunch of rules. I'm not going to lie to people. I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do to the best of my ability. And that should be enough to get the job done.
Absolutely. And at the end of the day, I'm a big rule person
Oh, I
and
know.
I like to win the game and I can't do it in good conscience if we cheat. That's a
Well, I look at it
loss
this
in
way. I
my
tell
book.
people, everybody says, create people that are creative think outside the box. I don't, I mean, thinking outside the box is easy. I think real creativity is figuring out a way to solve the same problem inside the framework that everybody else uses, but nobody else has thought of that solution before. And
Just a more efficient box.
I come up with it. It came up with it when I was at Target, right? Because Target was so hell-bent on common practices. Every single thing you did in that store was a common practice, no matter what, from unloading the truck to, replenishment to scanning your research to make sure that the products that were empty actually were empty on the shelves and there were none in the back room and all of that stuff. And, anytime we would go in and see somebody that had a broken store, we knew that the common practices were jacked. Well, I wanted to find ways to do things inside of common practices, but it was a different way of doing it. And ultimately, I was pretty successful at coming up with some ways to do things like that. I don't think the insurance industry is any different, honestly, because we're so heavily regulated, we have to play by a set of rules. So let's figure out a way to do things better inside the same framework of rules.
And there's such a lag for most of the stuff that goes on within the industry too. I feel like everybody's playing catch up a majority of the time, but not a lot of people are trying to maybe improve what they've been doing and always have been doing for a while. So that's definitely one of the most interesting parts about my job here at Florida Risk is that it is a lot of handling, like, how could we make this better, even though we're already doing this? What can we improve here? But also, on a separate note, as anybody that's listening to this phone call or podcast can tell, we both have a slight, maybe large case of ADHD. I personally, maybe this is me just justifying it. I don't feel like ADHD is like something that inhibits me. I really just feel like it's a style of thinking or maybe a way that my brain works. How do you leverage your ADHD
Well,
within the industry, on your daily work schedule?
you've seen my calendar. You've seen my monitor set up. No, I mean, look, I'm not somebody who likes to take man-made medicine and put it into my body. I'm not a fan of Adderall or any of that other stuff. I don't think negatively of anybody who does do that, but I've always felt like if I take the medication, I lose my edge to a certain degree. And so I need my edge. My edge is what makes me competitive. It's what allows me to win. And so, thinking through kind of what we talked about just a second ago with creativity being operating inside the framework of the hand you're dealt, I you know, I'm going to operate inside the hand I'm dealt with the ADHD. How do I control that? Well, I have a vertical monitor and two 49-inch monitors that are subdivided into two 27-inch monitors. So I can operate. And I joke about it when I get up and speak, but I literally work like a typewriter. I go from left to right. And when I get done, I go back to the left and start over again. And I just set my day up. It's similar to what James Clear talks about in Atomic Habits. You set yourself up to have things where you need them so that you can do the things you should be doing on a daily basis. And it's a lot of very, very small changes that need to be made. And like, it's just like, if I'm going to check LinkedIn every single morning, first thing when I get up, which is what I do because I go interact with people and leave comments and all of that, I'm going to have my phone sitting right on my nightstand right next to me so that when I get up, I can see that my phone's there. I'm going to pick it up. And I'm going to lay in bed and go through LinkedIn like I normally would. If there's something that needs to be done at work, then I'm going to write it down and leave it literally sitting right next to my keyboard so that I can go through and cross things off my list. My problem is my lists are pages long and legal pads deep. So sometimes I have to go through multiple legal pads and multiple lists just to check stuff off the list. But I try and give myself enough things in the analogy, if it really is an analogy, how I explain it to people is this. If I had a job as an air traffic controller and I was going to come in the morning at 8 o'clock and you told me that by the time I left, I needed to land 15 or 20 planes over the course of the day. And some of them would be coming in at the same or similar times. I would have no problem. It would be absolutely perfectly done without question. But if you told me that I had one very important job and it was to land a single plane between the hours of 8 and 5 at some point, but I was really going to have to focus to make sure that thing got where it needed to be, pray to God you're not on that plane because it ain't going to happen. I can do fine with the 14 or 15 things. And it's just like with the way my monitors are set up. Pretty much every day, what I set out to do is done before I leave. I don't get everything on my list done, but at least the things I prioritize for that day do get done. And I close my monitors down and start fresh every day. It's just a weird, quirky idiosyncrasy that I have. But if you ever walk in my office and I'm gone, there ain't anything on my monitors anymore. But if you walk in and I'm here, the whole circumference of my desk is covered in stuff that I'm working on.
I would say I probably work in a very similar manner, not as efficient, but I'm a big list person. So I always have a lot of different lists going of things that I need to be doing. And I also have that achievement motivation. So I like to check things off and that gives me that serotonin boost to keep doing it. I have one more question for you. I know you have a lot of things going on in the upcoming 12 months. We're doing a lot of different things in the agency. So this is going to be like a meshed couple questions together. But what do you think that you're most excited for in the upcoming year? What's really like keeping you up at night? You thinking about it? Stuff like that.
I think what I'm most excited for in the coming year is production in the middle market. I think what keeps me awake at night for the coming year is production in the middle market. So it's really kind of one in the same. COVID took the wind out of our sails a little bit, just in that we couldn't do what we know we needed to do. And so from that aspect of things, we relied more heavily on inbound leads. We started getting a little sloppy in terms of what we were going to bring into the agency. We wrote smaller accounts. We started having non-pay issues and some other things. And so that kind of stuff always keeps me awake at night because I know it's not what I want for the agency and I'm the one who allowed it to happen. So until we get back on track and the middle market stuff is clicking at the level that it was pre-COVID, you know, I'm probably going to continue to think about that far more than most. At the same time, it's not like we're not writing stuff in the middle market. We've had good wins. It's just I don't want any of the other stuff anymore. And what happens is you see producers get attracted toward activity, which is small stuff, because those people are constantly calling, constantly shopping. But I see their close rates go down. I see retention go down. And so it's a bit of a process to get everybody back on the rails. And just, I'm at a point now where I'm going to have to put a minimum revenue threshold on the agency again, so that we're not paying people to go out and prospect stuff that's not in our wheelhouse. We need to go out and focus on the middle market. So I know what we're capable of. I know the systems that we have. I think that having you on board and what you're doing, and with the tech stack that we have, it's a huge weapon for the producers that did not exist pre-COVID. And, you know, I think that with the interactions that we're having with our existing clients, and just seeing what we're investing in them and what we're able to do to help them take the ball further down the field, is very satisfying for me to see, because it's exactly what I envisioned when I brought you in. And you're doing an incredible job of making sure those things happen the way that they should. I just want to see that happen more on new business, and see the producers get out and originate more opportunities in the coming months. And, you know, as that happens, we'll call the book and get rid of the low stuff, and either put it into, leave it in a small business unit, or we're going to completely be done with it and recommend they find somebody else to represent them.
So I'm also very excited to see how this role is going to come to fruition kind of in the end of this year. I know in the beginning it was a lot of intro, but since we are kind of hammering down on the details, the next 6 months I think are going to be very eventful, and fingers crossed the best way for the agency.
Yeah, no, I think it will too. And I think the other thing, the other piece of that is, you know, you right now you're getting integrated with some of our problem children that we've had problems getting to adopt certain things anyhow, but it's a different mindset and it's a different energy when you start going in and talking about the things you're doing at new business in an effort to try and bring something in. So I think that to me, that's extremely exciting. I'm looking forward to running more new business appointments in the second half of this year than I have in a long time. So I think it's going to be a good time. I think it's going to be a great experience for you to be able to see what it looks like at the point of sale and not after the fact, because now, you know, it's not that we're just representing a concept. We're going to bring the person in that's responsible for executing at the agency level and build that relationship from the very, very beginning. And I think that increases adoption and lowers loss ratio, which increases revenue to the agency.
Well, thank you for answering all of my questions.
I mean, those were good questions too. I mean, I've been on a lot of podcasts. I don't think I've ever been asked any of those. So that's good.
Woohoo. Yeah. Don't worry, everybody. I'll eventually have more.
Yeah. Well, we're going to bring you back next time you have a list, feel free. But everybody else, we're going to wrap up this week. We will catch you next time. See ya.
Been listening to Power Producers Shop Talk. You can follow us at the Power Producers Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. And if you want to take your game to the next level, check out our commercial insurance training course at killingcommercial.com, or visit Amazon to pick up a copy of our international best-selling book, The Extra 2 Minutes.